So the story for this morning is something we can probably all appreciate in this season. It is called Too Many Toys. Some people have that reaction. And because this book is small, we're going to be putting the pictures up on the screen. So, Too Many Toys by David Shannon. Spencer had too many toys. They covered the floor of his bedroom and piled up in his closet. They were stashed under his bed. They spilled down the stairs and into the living room. He had big toys in the backyard and little toys in the bathtub. Sometimes Spencer played with nice, quiet, wooden pull toys. Other times he played with noisy, crazy electronic toys. He had puzzles, board games, and talking books that fueled his mind, and loud, jumpy, frenzied video games that fried it. Spencer liked to make his toys into a parade that stretched from one corner of the house to the other corner and back again. There was an entire zoo of stuffed animals and a gigantic army of little action figures. He had a fleet of planes, trains, and toy boats, and a convoy of miniature trucks and cars. He also had lots and lots of musical instruments and art supplies and alien spaceman weapons. Everyone gave toys to Spencer. Of course, his mom and his dad did, but so did Grandma Bobo and Poppy and Granddaddy and Auntie Mim and Uncle Fred and Cousin Drew. They gave him toys for every holiday, even the 4th of July, and especially his birthday. He also got toys from all his friends on his birthday and their birthdays, too, when he went to their parties. He got toys at the drive-thru with his kid burger and at school for having lots of peace person points and at the dentist and at the doctor when he didn't squirm. That's a lot of toys. They were becoming a household hazard. Have you ever stepped on a Lego piece in your bare feet? Or a jack? Well, it really hurts, especially if you weigh as much as Spencer's dad. You can also trip on things like railroad tracks and race cars if you're carrying a load of laundry. One day, Spencer's mom had had it up to here with all the toys. Spencer, she yelled on her way upstairs, you have too many toys. That's impossible, thought Spencer. Then she said, we're going to get rid of some of them. That's a catastrophe. Pick out which toys you don't want, she ordered, and put them in this box. But I love them all, Spencer cried. All right, said his mother. I'll help you. She picked up an alien space ninja. How about this one? You haven't played with this in years. But I was just about to. Spencer, his mother said, it doesn't have a head. I'm making him a new one, Spencer replied. Fine, said Spencer's mother, but this one can definitely go. She put down the alien and picked up a filthy, one-eared bunny. Not Mr. Fluffer's, Mom. How could you? This one, then, she said. That's Mr. Fluffer's best friend. This one? Mother, have you forgotten? Grandma Bobo gave me that one on my 4th birthday, and I'll never be 4 again, ever. Oh, please, Spencer, said his mom, rolling her eyes. Don't be so dramatic. Okay, she said, you can keep that one, but I'm giving away this pig and Johnny Choo Choo. Tell you what, countered Spencer, I'll let you have the pig, but I get Johnny Choo Choo. What are you, a lawyer now? Asked Spencer's mother. You can keep Johnny Choo Choo, but the cow goes in the box too. Deal? How about two Gitchy Goomies instead, said Spencer, and I'll throw in a little peeper of your choice. How about all of them go in the box and you don't watch TV for a week? Spencer decided it was in his best interest to agree. Deal. Finally, some toys in the box, sighed Spencer's mother. I had no idea this would be so much work. She plopped down on the floor next to an egg-shaped pirate that bellowed, "Arg, avast ye scurvy dogs, avast, scurvy dog." "Here's another one you can do without," she said. "No problem," said Spencer. His mom nearly fell over. "What, you're gonna give it up just like that?" "Sure," Spencer replied. "That one's Dad's." So Spencer and his mom went through every toy box and looked in every closet and under every bed until they had haggled and wrestled and argued over every toy in the house. Finally, they were finished, and his mom sat down and had a nice hot cup of tea and a short rest. Then she went upstairs to begin loading the toys into the car. But instead of a nice, neat box of toys all ready to go, what she saw was a big, messy pile of toys all over the floor. "Spencer," she screamed, "what have you done? We had a deal." "You were right, Mom," Spencer called from his bedroom. "I do have too many toys, but we can't give away the box. It's the best toy ever." And with that, I invite you to stay here on the carpet.
According to some research done in Britain, the average 10-year-old child, and I suppose the average British 10-year-old child, has on average 238 toys, yet only plays with about a dozen of them. The average American household, again, this is the average, so there are certainly some that have a lot more and many with far less. The average American household contains 300,000 items. George Carlin had a great routine about those who live within the dominant culture's propensity for piling up stuff. "That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it?" he said, "trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. Your house is just a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. It's a pile of stuff with a cover on it." He was onto something, of course, as he so often was. 37% of people who have a two-car garage only have room to park one of those cars because of all the stuff they have in the garage. And 25%, fully a quarter of the people who own two-car garages, can't park either car in the garage. True confessions. And although the size of the average American home has tripled in the past 50 years, still 1 out of 10 Americans rent some kind of off-site storage, which is the fastest growing segment of the commercial real estate industry. There are 5 times the number of storage facilities than there are Starbucks in the United States. And there is 7.3 square feet of self-storage for every single person who lives in the US, from the tall to the small, if you were. It would actually be possible, this means, for every single person who lives in this country to stand at the same time under the roof of a self-storage facility. That is, if there weren't already so much stuff in them all. I once had a conversation with a German friend of mine about just how everybody in Germany learns English as a matter of course. I said that I'd always heard that English is a hard language to learn because it so often breaks all of its own rules. But Christoph said that wasn't true, that English is actually a pretty easy language to learn because it so often breaks all of its own rules, so that people here can usually understand what you're saying, even if what you're saying is in really fractured English. And besides, he said, you've pretty much got it made when you learn the word stuff. We Americans as a whole have so much stuff that we will spend over the course of our lifetimes an average of 3,680 hours, that's 153 days out of our life, looking for the stuff we have misplaced. Ain't it though? Phones, car keys, sunglasses, and paperwork are the top of the list of things we look for. That's lower down. I gotta say that one of the great things about tracking my steps is that now, when I leave the office, get out to the car, realize that I'd forgotten something, walk back to the office, get that thing, and walk back to the car, it all counts. Which means I'm not just forgetful, I'm staying fit. So where does all this stuff come from? Well, the simple answer would be, of course, the store. And did you know that in the US, there are more shopping malls than high schools? Well, that's the easy answer. The harder, perhaps even more disturbing answer, is that it comes from the deep-seated desire for more stuff. We may deny it, we may fight against it, yet the idea that we need more, and especially the newest, shiniest, most expensive stuff, is reinforced daily in ways both subtle and overt. Virtually every commercial we encounter on TV or YouTube or Facebook, wherever, essentially tells us the same thing, that without this thing, our lives will be incomplete. And it's not even this thing that we need. It's this brand of things. Louis Vuitton makes an iPhone case that is truly one of the most hideous things I've ever seen. It has the LV monogram all over it, looking like the phone has a case of chicken pox. I know some people who want to get one. I'm not saying it's my older son, but I know some people who want to get one because it has that LV monogram like the chicken pox, even though this phone case costs $2,000 for an iPhone case, for an ugly iPhone case. But it's a Louis Vuitton iPhone case. And I suppose because it's $2,000, which means it's got to be good. It's like Gucci flip-flops. This is great, I have to say. I love this community. Now, I know that I'm not talking to some of us in this room. Some of us do manage to avoid at least the worst of these tendencies. Some of us aren't all that interested in the newest and supposedly best. Yet too often, even we can't avoid the call of stuff. We have it foisted upon us. We have a train that runs around the base of our Christmas tree, a Lionel, because we know Lionel is a classic. Well, last year, the tender car suffered an accident, and one of its trucks, the wheel unit, broke almost entirely off. So I brought it to Railtails, the great local hobby shop that specializes in model railroading. And they told me that not only couldn't they fix it, but that they had stopped selling Lionel products altogether because some time ago, Lionel started building its trains more cheaply, and they no longer sent out spare parts for repairs because they just expected people to buy a new train to replace whatever was broken. So much stuff. Now, when I told my wife what I was going to be preaching about this morning, she said, "Well, that's a bit of a downer, don't you think, before Christmas?" And I suppose you can see it that way. Just 2 days before many of us will spend time unwrapping presents does seem like an odd time to preach against the evil of materialism. Yet the kind of cynicism that can take hold of us is not without some foundation. Who hasn't at least rolled their eyes when the Christmas stuff appears on store shelves before the turkey is cold? Who hasn't banged their steering wheel as they fight to find a parking space in one of those shopping malls that outnumber high schools? And who hasn't made that mad dash from store to store because the first one doesn't have the whatever it is you absolutely have to have for whoever it is? This stress over stuff is so pervasive that when he was asked about the inspiration for his now famous How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Theodore Geisel said that he had modeled the Grinch after himself, that he had become more than a little turned off by all of the hoopla and hullabaloo, and he wanted to find some way to reconnect with the real spirit of Christmas. He said it was the easiest book he ever wrote, except he couldn't quite figure out the ending, how the Grinch would redeem himself. And then you have Spencer. He had so many toys, so much stuff. Yet in the end, he's totally satisfied, enraptured even, by the simple joy of playing with a cardboard box. I remember quite vividly when my niece, as a baby, opened up the wrapped present that my brother had sought for weeks to find the perfect thing. And she unwrapped the box, took out the toy, threw it off to the side, and played with the box for the rest of the day. There's an episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. And if you don't know, I probably can't explain it to you. In this episode, SpongeBob and Patrick are eagerly awaiting the delivery of a box. And when the package arrives, it is clear that it is a large box containing a large screen TV. They toss the TV away and climb into the box and begin playing with it. Now, from outside, their neighbor Squidward hears the sound of a rocket ship blasting off, a battle between pirates and robots, and a police officer standoff, a police robber standoff. Each time he looks inside, though, all he sees are SpongeBob and Patrick sitting in the box with their big goofy grins. And when he asks what is going on, SpongeBob says, "Imagination." Well, that's what Spencer's doing too. Nothing fancy, yet nothing fancier either. Nothing more new, more improved, more exciting, more it'll make your life better than our imaginations. As we get older, we tend to get out of practice, but it's always still there. And discovering or rediscovering, it can be such a counterpoint to our culture's propensity for piling up stuff. Another way to say this, perhaps, is that direct, unmediated experience is a gift far greater than anything we could buy in a store. Some of my greatest memories of Christmas are not about the stuff I got, although I do really fondly remember the G.I. Joe space capsule, which I had wanted so much. My greatest memories of my childhood have to do with time that I spent with my parents. I think about the backpacking trips that I took with my dad. It was so special and so great just to spend time with him, and especially time spent together without all the usual distractions. We could really feel the sun on our backs, really see the bright, clear air, really hear the sound of birds and the rippling creeks, even really feel the blister forming on my foot. These were all part of the experience that I wouldn't trade for anything I ever was given. Today, thru-hikers on the Appalachian Trail are reporting that they're seeing an increased number of people hiking and talking on their cell phones. I know that I'm guilty of taking pictures or video of some incredible vista and then ignoring the incredible vista to look at the pictures and videos I had just taken of it. Well, it needn't be so. My friends, it needn't be so. I'm not saying that the giving and receiving of material presents isn't a good thing. Yet if we can remind ourselves and the people with which we live and come into contact that it's not the only thing, well, then we will all be the richer for it. So please, I encourage you, I implore you, I implore all of us, myself included, look for the experiences of the days and weeks, months and years to come. Even those of us for whom the holidays in general, or maybe this holiday season in particular, are really difficult or painful, even for us, there are moments, even if only moments, that we can take heart and really enjoy them. So take heart, my friends. 'Tis the season to be alive, to be ourselves and to experience the others we encounter as the greatest gifts we could ever want. May our presence be the present that is remembered in the years to come. May it be so. At this time, I'm going to invite us to take a moment of silence, punctuated by the sound of imagination, so that we might take some time to be here together.